the sharing of good food, family, and friends. Isn't that what we wish for during the holidays? Well, today on New Letters on the Air, we'll combine all of that with the whimsical stories that poet Marilyn Callett wrote for her family and combined in her book, One for Each Night, Hanukkah Tales and Recipes. And we'll hear another family's reaction to her inventions in this special holiday edition of New Letters on the Air, produced at the University of Missouri, Kansas City. So stay with us. I'm Angela Elam, and here's Marilyn Callett to fill us in with a little background on the creative influence of her childhood, split between Alabama and New York.
I was born in Montgomery. My mother's family was from the South, but I grew up in New York, so there's both influences there. The Jewish community in Montgomery is quite large and very tight-knit, and they are observant Jews, and so I was lucky to have that as my background. Both my mother and grandmother were Sunday school teachers. And then when we moved to Long Island, there were no shortage of Jews. And my mother continued to teach Sunday school there. The children complained about her because she was teaching Hebrew with a Southern accent. They couldn't stand it. You know, it was hard enough to learn the Hebrew. And then there was the Baruch Atah. They were, what is this? Do we have to do this? Which she taught for 40 years.
That's great.
My mother's family was German, but my father's family came from Minsk. And we really knew very little about them, except that my grandmother, they were peasants, basically. They grew potatoes and picked potatoes. You know, the Minsk theme comes from my father's side.
So in a way, that led you to kind of create this world.
It did, yes, it did. You know, as I grew up, I realized that I could find out a little bit, but mostly I was going to have to imagine that life. And so I've written some poems trying to imagine my grandma Anna's point of view. What was it like to come here, to come to New York at the age of 16, you know, knowing no English and coming over in steerage and all that. And so I've had to imagine. And although I've been fortunate to find out records about the German side of the family, for the Russians, it's just chaos.
That's fascinating. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think I just want to say that the recipes in the Hanukkah book are very, very good. My mother-in-law, who was a caterer, you know, these are her recipes. I will tell you, though, that she corrected them even after the book came out. And I'd say, Hilda, these are your recipes. You gave me this. No, you know, you could put a little less butter, you know, a little more. So the fine-tuning is left up to the cooks.
We'll hear some of those stories and recipes in a moment, but first we'll put Marilyn Callett's book, One for Each Night, Hanukkah Tales and Recipes, to a test. I asked KCUR's Linda Scher if she could help me out with this, so she called her mother and her aunt, two lively women in their 80s, along with her first cousin, to the home of her mom, Terry, whose last name seemed appropriate for this cooking project. It's German for white bread.
Do you say Weissbrot or Weiss?
Weissbrot will do, or Weissbrot. Whatever fits.
Weissbrot.
That's my mom.
And then we're joined by your sister, Adele.
Adele Yettis, just like lettuce.
And her daughter.
Beverly Bodine.
Great. And of course, Linda Scher.
Nice to be here. This is going to be fun.
Great. Just to set it up a little bit, Terry, you were about to tell me a little bit ago about your childhood, you and your sister, and where you grew up.
Right. We grew up in upstate New York, Sullivan County, about 100 miles north of New York City. And we were on a farm, and my parents, they're from Russia, and my mother just never really knew when the holidays were. So we did not have any background of Hanukkah or any other holiday. One time my brother and I went to school, and the teacher says, well, what are you doing here? I says, what do you mean? She says, this is your holiday. It's Hanukkah. You better go home and tell your mother and celebrate. I was so embarrassed. Did you know that, Adele? Yeah, but I thought that that there was one Christmas, we were little kids, and of course, being Jewish, we always wanted to see the Christmas trees and the presents and the music, and you know, we wanted it, and we didn't have it. One Christmas, we hung up our stockings anyway, and we were small. I don't know if you remember.
I was never small.
Anyway. Mama put oranges in there, and we didn't have much fruit or stuff like that. And that was such a surprise to us that Mama would give us something, an orange, which we loved, but the idea that she gave us something in our stocking, these four little Jewish kids. But I'm so happy you're here, Angela, for this. It's a lovely celebration.
Do we have gifts?
Which reminds me of a memory of my own.
Actually, yeah. I know my mother, she was, what, a Renaissance woman. She raised me and she took care of my grandmother all by herself. And so it was not easy to celebrate Hanukkah. She was always short of a little gelt, as they say, a little money. So, and I would feel a little bad, you know, and just a little sorry for myself, because I thought, all these kids are having 8 presents, you know, one for each night, you know, and I might get one. So I kind of had to, you know, hang back and just listen to what other kids got. But then I found out they would get underwear or some socks, you know, or maybe a dollar, you know. So it wasn't like I was missing out on anything, and we always had something, so we always celebrated.
Well, that's good. I'm glad to know that, because I always felt inadequate in raising my daughter and, you know, introducing various Judaism things to her, which a lot of it I didn't know myself, which
that's
I'm learning
right. That's why you made me go to Sunday school.
Mm-hmm. Well, it was really Aunt Adele that made you go to Sunday school.
Well, I thought we would start right now by just listening to the opening of her book, yeah, so you guys could get an idea of where this book started.
Here's Marilyn Callett with the preface to One for Each Night, Hanukkah Tells and Recipes.
Recently at Hanukkah, I found myself broke, flat as a latke. I knew that my daughter Heather and my husband Lou would both be searching the mantelpiece each night for a present. 8 nights of the holiday times 2, 16 presents called for, and no guilt. Using my talents as an English major, I decided to create homemade presents, to write festive news stories for each night of Hanukkah. The stories would be about food, of course, and I would cook up tasty dishes to accompany the tales. The first night, Lou and Heather were a bit skeptical about receiving stories as gifts, but they entered into the celebratory spirit as soon as they tasted the Hanukkah treats that I had baked. By the second night, they were hooked. They both tore open their envelopes to read fresh adventures, and their mouths watered since they had quickly figured out that the foods mentioned in the stories would be waiting for them at our table. Now you hold in your hands 8 of the original stories in this first edition. I hope that you enjoy these tales and recipes. Many of the recipes were provided by my mother-in-law, Hilda Gross, one of the great bakers in Philadelphia, former caterer of desserts, mother of 4, and wife of an enthusiastic eater. Every good cook adds a few creative and original touches to the best recipes, and any good storyteller will lend his or her own inflections to the tales. Let me know how these holiday treats turn out for you, and tell me which spices you decide to add to the Hanukkah magic. And now, Fressen.
So what are we going to cook today?
You can't have Hanukkah without latkes. That's the most traditional food of Hanukkah.
And they're delicious. I just love them. I can eat a dozen at a time.
We all can.
Yeah. Well, we just like to slap on the sour cream and the applesauce and just dig in.
Right.
That's right.
Fressen.
Well, should we move to the kitchen and get started? Because I guess we have to peel potatoes and...
Yeah, Marilyn Callett calls them latkes.
Latkes. And she's got a story about one kid is a latchkey kid and the other kid is a latke kid. It was so cute.
This is the latke child from One for Each Night, Hanukkah Tales and Recipes. Harry was a cheerful, friendly, roly-poly child. Like his dear father, he loved to eat. His mother loved to cook, and so their family hummed along nicely. Every day, Harry's mother packed his school lunchbox with latkes, Harry's favorite food. Along with those little potato pancakes, his mother included a small cup of sour cream and a container of applesauce. Now, we all know that one can have too much of a good thing. Truth be told, Harry was growing sick of latkes. One day at lunchtime, he sat next to a classmate named Anna. Anna was nibbling on carrot sticks and celery, apples, and mixed nuts. Harry looked over at her lunch and listened longingly to the crunch of fresh vegetables and fruits. "I'll trade you a couple of potato pancakes for a slice of apple and a couple of almonds," Harry said. "Sure," said Anna, who was growing sick of rabbit food. Those latkes smelled so good she could hardly wait to bite into one. After that, Harry and Anna shared their lunches every day. The combination of foods made them grow happier and healthier. Harry became lean and strong. Anna started to round out in very pleasant ways. One day, as they were munching companionably, Harry noticed a gold key on the chain around Anna's neck. "What's that key for?" asked Harry. "I'm a latchkey child," Anna responded. "My parents both work until 6, but I get home from school at 3, so I have to let myself in with my key," she said. "Well, I'm a latchkey child," exclaimed Harry. They both laughed hard, so hard they almost forgot to finish their lunches. As it turned out, both children possessed the keys to happiness, since they knew how to make lasting friendships. And they both held the keys to their parents' hearts. This is a recipe for easy latkes. You'll need 6 medium-sized potatoes, 2 small onions, 2 eggs, 4 tablespoons of flour, 1 teaspoon salt, you can use less, 1/2 teaspoon of baking powder, a dash of pepper, and some vegetable oils. Grate those medium-sized potatoes and 2 small onions. If you're using a hand grater, and that's what Jewish mothers prefer, use the finer blades for nicely textured latkes. Drain off the extra liquid. Stir in the eggs, flour, salt, baking powder, and a dash of pepper. Heat 1/4 inch of oil in a frying pan, and that oil is ready when a drop of water sizzles in the pan. Don't let the oil burn. Gently place the tablespoons of latke batter in the hot oil. Fry on both sides until golden brown and drain well on paper towels. You must serve them hot with sour cream or applesauce. There's nothing worse than a cold latke. If you have mashed potatoes on hand, you can add 1 few tablespoons to your grated potato batter for fluffier latkes. That recipe serves 4.
So with easy latkes, we're going to up the recipe to what, 8 potatoes?
At least 8 potatoes.
But leave the other ingredients the same.
The other ingredients is plenty. Plenty of everything. 1 teaspoon of salt is really too much. We use less salt. Of course, less can be used, and I always use less salt. I love the idea of the baking powder. That's superb because that makes it fluffier.
Lighten.
Yeah, lighter.
Okay.
The pepper and the vegetable oil, that's good.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about what I do. I don't put in the flour, but I understand the flour because the potatoes are so juicy. You have too much moisture, and you want it a little more solid, so the tablespoons of flour does a trick.
So should we try the flour this
time? Oh, yeah. Let's follow her recipe, except we'll just use 2 more potatoes.
You're out of here.
I'm out of here.
Does Adele do all the cooking?
Yeah, she does. I mean, she does better, and I'm just not adept at it. I mean, I usually eat ready-made foods mostly because I've never been a cook.
Grating those potatoes, now that takes some time there.
Yeah, that does, but that basically is the best way to do it.
Yeah.
That is the original. You can go ahead and put it in the grinders and this. No, it's not the same. It's just not the same. Or you can even buy shredded. An easy way is to buy shredded potatoes.
Oh, I didn't even think of that. I could have saved you some time.
Make it 1, 2, 3. Buy shredded potatoes. Yeah. But this is the original. Who's going to take over? My arm is full now.
Yeah, that's
what
terrible.
What else did you put in here?
Onion, egg, salt, and pepper.
Do you have any garlic powder?
Oh.
You must put garlic.
Oh, okay.
You must put garlic.
Okay, and I put a little bit of right above Bev's head over there. Okay. We need some oil, don't we?
I need a big spoon. Does she have a big spoon? Would that be in that one? Oh, yeah, that's right. She's got all kinds of stuff over there.
Wooden spoon?
Okay, thank you.
Okay. I find some oil.
And now I'm beating up the eggs. I've already shaved up all the potatoes, and I put in the onions, and I put in baking powder and salt and pepper, and now I'm whipping up the eggs. I haven't put in the flour yet to soak up that extra juice, but I'm going to do that in a minute. Here go the eggs. Okay, I need a little... you have matzo meal? We'll use that.
Yeah.
Should we use that instead of flour?
Sure.
Same difference. Okay.
Sure.
We'll use that. We only need a tablespoon or so.
There you go.
Actually, the fire should be fairly hot. But if you do that, then you have to keep replacing the oil.
Well, while the latkes are frying, let's listen to another of Marilyn Callett's tales here on New Letters on the Air.
Lord of the Rugalach. Bubby was a beautiful little old lady with a secret. She knew the ancient art of restoring human happiness through baking. She practiced good magic, the alchemy of turning humble ingredients into light and golden creations. But Bubby was growing older, and she feared her art would die out, leaving the earth flat as a flapjack. Her husband, the great wizard Gasoff, worked in his laboratory deep underground. The secret arts he practiced restored ancient machinery to humming order. He was a brother in the fraternity of tinkerers and engineers, and he was not at all interested in the culinary arts, except in the art of eating. Bubby and Gasoff had a beautiful son named Lou. When he was born, he smelled like cinnamon and raisins, like a little loaf of coffee cake. His parents should have suspected that he was chosen to rise. As a youth, Lou seemed to be interested in his father's workshop rather than in his mother's spells. But as he grew older, he turned more and more to his mother's secret arts. He became an apprentice baker. "My son," his mother said when he was old enough to understand, "the world is round like a challah, and we bake in order to maintain roundness, both in humans and in the cosmos. If the cake rises, the heavens stay high above, and the humans rest happily at the table. Earth was created at the kitchen table, and we renew its origins daily." Lou was an eager, gifted student. He could bake a rugalach to end all rugalachs. Whenever there was a celebration among the Jewish community, families called upon Lou to bake. Yet there were obstacles. Some felt that Lou should remain true to his mother's recipe and that he must never, never add raisins. One night, in his sleep, a voice came to Lou. "Louis, throw the fiery rum-soaked raisins into the mountain of dough." Lou was deeply perplexed, but he followed the voice, rose and soaked some raisins, and then, as only adults can do, he lit them very carefully over the kitchen sink and watched until the flames died down. He threw these into the bowl of dough, rolled, twisted, and cut the dough into cookies. While some of the old witchy women criticized these cookies, "Oy vey, I'm getting ambition schnockered, a little dizzy, just from one bite," they ate them all up at the next Oneg Shabbat. Lou made his mother proud, and he made all of the noshers happy. Though wars continued on earth, some people were always sweet and gentle from their eating of Lou's rugalach. Those people took afternoon naps and hardly ever quarreled.
Meanwhile, back in the Weisbrot kitchen, the cooking of Marilyn Callett's recipes continues.
Oh, the latkes are looking good.
Golden brown.
Are we going to do the kreplach too?
Yep, I brought everything for it. So
my mom used it to make the dough. It was just, you make a mound of flour and you throw in an egg in just a little bit of water, and you smush it all up, and you make it into a ball, and then you roll it out, and with the rolling pin, plenty of flour on there so it doesn't stick, and you roll it out, and then you cut it in little squares, and you fill it with either mashed potatoes or ground meat or cottage cheese. Yeah, it's a very simple thing.
And she never used a recipe. She could, my grandmother could feel it when it was ready, when it was just perfect.
Yeah, yeah.
Just by her fingertips. It was amazing.
The only thing is, the next day after she made anything, mm-hmm. you could take that object, whether it was a biscuit or a noodle or whatever, and you could kill something with it. It was
absolutely
rock solid.
Rock.
When she was like 90-something, we didn't know how old she was ever.
Exactly.
You know, she could have been 100. We don't know. But she forgot everyone's name, except everyone was Adele. Al was Adele, I was Adele, Beverly was Adele, Mom was everyone. Hello, Adele. So I would say, okay, Bubby, how do you make matzo balls hard? You know, because she made them like, you know.
Rocks.
Yeah, like gun balls, you know. She says, oh, that's easy. You just add more matzo meal. It's like she didn't know anything, none of our names or what day it was, but a recipe, boom, she knew the answer.
If you want to make anything light and not like it, then you separate your eggs and you whip up the whites, and then whatever you're making, it'll come out light and fluffy.
Yeah.
Whatever recipe it is.
Marilyn Callett has a concoction for lightweight matzo balls in her book, One From Each Night, Hanukkah Tales and Recipes. Here's her story to go along with it for New Letters on the Air.
The matzo ball. All the girls were primping, getting ready for the matzo ball, the biggest social event of the season. Fancy dress was required. Each girl yearned to be the lightest, fairest, fluffiest maiden at the dance. According to tradition, ball gowns were supposed to dazzle in ivory or white. Shoes could be bleached to match, and girls might adorn them with sprays of parsley or celery. Onions were absolutely out of the question, as they would clash with girlish perfumes. Poor Hetty! She did not own a gown for the dance. Worse yet, she had no money and no time to earn any. "Don't worry, darling," her mother comforted her. "We can find something at Matzo Ball Mall." So they zipped off to a little-known mall outside of Chicken Soup Forge, where all of the stores specialized in secondhand matzo ball clothing and accessories. Many great Jewish actresses donated their clothing to the boutiques, her mother explained, and the profits go to the scholarship fund. Hetty allowed herself to be coaxed along by her mom. The moment she walked into the first store, matzo ball bells, she saw the very dress she needed. It shimmered round and white and was decked with layers of frothy lace. Everywhere dangling spangles gleamed in the shape of little carrots. The more carrots, the more valuable the dress. And wouldn't you know it, it fit her like a soup spoon. Searching inside the lining, Hetty found the label, made by Calvin Perlmutter Klein for Courtney Lovenut, but worn only once when she fell off a stool on MTV. "You were right, Mother," Hetty admitted. "I shouldn't be such a snob. From now on, the thrift shops are for me." Hetty glowed like a disco matzo ball on the night of the big dance. She was perfect, a little salty, light on her feet. The boys were stirred, and the other girls agreed. Hetty looked absolutely delicious.
Should I start, like, just frying up the meat for the...
Yeah,
not a bad
Kreplach.
Idea.
Kreplach. What does she put in the meat? Anything?
Yeah, let's look up the recipe here.
Okay. It's back here. It is
Kreplach. Bear Bader's Kreplach. She calls it because her story is about a bear who loves Kreplach. Okay. So let's see. The filling is 1/2 pound of cooked meat, 1 egg, 1 slice of onion, salt and pepper, chicken fat. That's like a mainstay of Jewish cooking. It's very tasty. It's high in cholesterol, but it really adds to the flavor of Jewish cooking. And we usually make our own, or you can buy it, but you just take the fat from a chicken and throw it in a pan, fry it up, and the fat just renders out of it. And the best part is the little crunchy little things that are left that we call grivelach. This Bear Bader's Kreplach story is so cute because this bear was terrifying the neighborhood. And they plied him with Kreplach and made him their friend. And he turns out to be this dancing bear.
Mo and the Dancing Bear. Mo and his family lived in the village of Kreplach Eaters, not too far from Old Minsk. As you know, Kreplach is a noodle dumpling filled with chopped meat. The Chinese call these wontons, and they roll the dough until it's smooth. Jewish grandmothers make these wrappers wrinkly to resemble the faces of newborns and of very old men. Either way, they're delicious, and everyone in Mo's village loved them, though in hard times it was difficult to find meat for the fillings. Mo was 9 years old and restless. He yearned to hike through the woods. He had become a good woodsman, but it was October and the snow had been falling for weeks. "I'll leave a trail of Kreplach so the family can find me," he thought. The Kreplach from the night before had been almost empty inside, with only a little bit of meat in each one. Mo set out through the woods, marking his path with Kreplach. A big old bear smelled those dumplings and began to follow Mo's tasty trail. That bear devoured every one of those near-empty creplocks, and then he started growling for more. Mo turned around and beheld the giant brown creature. Quickly, he pulled his harmonica from his pocket and began to play a Yiddish tune. The bear blinked, smiled, and started to lift his huge paws. As long as Mo played, the bear jigged. Mo kept up the lively music all the way home. Now, Mo was the owner of a dancing bear. He named her Klezmer. His family was distressed, another mouth to feed, and a huge one at that. But soon it became clear that Klezmer was a lucrative attraction. Mothers and fathers brought their children to watch the bear dance, and even a few Cossacks snuck away from the castle to observe. Most of the spectators left a coin or a loaf of pumpernickel or something else good to eat. Sometimes, when Mo played the harmonica, he jigged along with the bear. One day, a little girl said loudly, "Mama, that bear is a better dancer than Mo." Unfortunately, Mo heard this, and his pride was wounded. When he danced, he tapped his toes faster and swung his arms wider than ever before, but now he had doubt in his mind. In those days, if anyone had a question, he or she consulted the rabbi. The smartest rabbi in Minsk was due to visit Mo's village the next day. So Mo led Klezmer to visit the sage. Politely, Mo asked the frightened rabbi, "Wise one, which of us is the better dancer?" Then Mo blew a lively klezmer tune and danced beside Klez. "You make excellent partners," the rabbi pronounced. "Put on a silly cap, tie a matching scarf around the bear's neck, and soon your fame will spread far and wide." And that's exactly what Mo did. Mo and Klezmer danced for the crowds every Sunday at 4:30, and the bear always performed beautifully, as long as he was served kreplach and a nice slice of coffee cake afterward.
Mo and the Dancing Bear by Marilyn Callett from her book One for Each Night, Hanukkah Tales and Recipes. Now let's join in at the Weisbrod house to hear how things turned out.
Okay.
Oh, how beautiful.
Please, God, let this taste good after all of our experimenting.
Amen. Amen.
All right. Dig in.
Dig in.
Let's go. I want to see what these kreplach taste like.
Oh, me too.
Because I have never...
What's in them, hamburger?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. All I know is the latkes were absolutely fantastic.
Yum, yum.
Well, it looks like a great meal. Thanks for having us into your home.
Oh, this thanks is really for coming and doing all. I mean, we wouldn't have done this if it wasn't for you.
A fun morning.
Yes. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah.
Thanks to Linda Scher and her mother, Terry Weisbrod, her aunt Adele Yettis, and cousin Bev Bodine for experimenting with these Hanukkah tales and recipes from the book One for Each Night by Marilyn Callett, whose seventh book of poetry is due out January 2018. For links, visit newletters.org and click On the Air, or follow us on Facebook and Twitter at New Letters Radio. By the way, one of Marilyn Callett's poetry books has been published by Bookmark Press. Find out about their January writing contest deadline also at newletters.org. New Letters on the Air is a production of New Letters, the quarterly magazine at UMKC. Partial financial support comes from the Missouri Arts Council, a state agency. Hanukkah Tales and Recipes was first produced in 2008 with Eric Motter, Faiza Alhambre, and Dennis Conroe. Thanks also to Claire Verbeck and Jamie Walsh. And to you for listening. I'm Angela Elam for New Letters on the Air.